Welcome to the podcast service of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network. Visit us online at massclimateaction.net or friend us on Facebook.
And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of December 5th, 2016. Today we're joined by our frequent guest and prolific commentator, Mr. D.R. Tucker. How are you doing this day, Mr. D.R. Tucker?
Doing well. How are you doing?
Good, good, good. As always, D.R., I'm glad to have you here. So, D.R., this is kind of a big day. Some good things happen. So let me set up the story, and I'll ask you what the details were. When last we spoke, right, at the last turn of the screw, the Army Corps of Engineers had set a deadline of December 5th to evict, maybe not forcefully, but to try and put a stranglehold on the camp of the Standing Rock Sioux Indians who were protesting the Dakota Access Pipeline. They were there in December. The winds, the snow was coming in. The overly militarized police near the reservation were trying to choke off supplies to the encampment of Native Americans and an increasing number of other Americans. The news media had, not the news media, but certainly social media had veterans organizing to march into the camp and to be present to protect the water defenders. Remarkable turn of events. And things were looking ominous. Things were looking ominous on December 4th, Sunday, December 4th, as we were heading into this showdown on the 5th. So tell me, DR, what happened up in Dakota?
Well, the Army Corps of Engineers rejected a permit for the construction of the most controversial portion of the Dakota Access Pipeline, the portion that would have gone over the Missouri River and inevitably leaked and ruined the water that the Standing Rock Sioux rely upon. It was greeted with a lot of celebration and a lot of rejoicing, and basically is once again much like the Obama's decision to say no to the Keystone XL pipeline, a testament to the power of activism and the power of citizen engagement. And it's something that certainly, you know, there is a bit of cautious optimism because it's unclear if this essentially ends permanently any sort of construction of the pipeline or along the river. But certainly, at least in the short term, it's a great decision. It's a great news.
Absolutely. I mean, so to be as specific as I like to be, it turned out that the Army Corps of Engineers refused to permit what's called an easement, right, which is a real estate term about giving permission to use your land for some other purpose, right? The Corps of Engineers denied to Energy Transfer Partners, which is the company that is trying to build this pipeline, it denied them an easement to build their pipeline underneath the body of water that is considered the source of drinking water for the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation. And they not only, by denying that easement, they also triggered what's called the environmental impact statement to try and find a different route for the pipeline, right? Mm-hmm. You saw that?
Yes. It's a point that Bill McKibben made that this will allow for the start of the environmental impact statement process, and basically then that EIS may make it quite clear that the current pathway for the Dakota Access Pipeline is not exactly the best pathway to go.
So DR, this is, it turns out to be huge and discombobulating, right? Mm-hmm. This thing, this $3.7 billion pipeline is now been basically denied the last, what, half mile, 5 miles of its construction.
Yes.
It's dead in the water. And it raises all kinds of questions, right? And I've got a list of them here in front of me. But one question is, should climate hawks be jubilant? Or Americans, let me put it, you know, much bigger than America. Should Americans be happy? Should they be worried? Should they be I don't know. What's the right attitude to take to this, what can only be called a surprising turn of events?
They should be happy, but obviously the fight isn't over yet. Brad Plumer of Vox noted that the new environmental impact assessment will take at least a year or more. Energy Transfer Partners says that the contracts for oil delivery will expire if the project was delayed past January the 1st. Brad Plumer also notes, quote, it's possible that the companies behind the pipeline can ask federal courts to block the Army Corps' decision in the coming days. Back in September, the D.C. Circuit Court sided with the companies in refusing to block the pipeline via injunction. So obviously there's still a lot of fight to go. Mm-hmm. And
I mean, you just have to, $3.7 billion is an awful lot of money.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of heft behind $3.7 billion. So
a lot of political power there.
A lot of political power.
Energy Transfer Partners, according to Brad Plumer, claims that it has already lost $100 million from delays in the pipeline. Of course, think of the millions of lives that would be lost if that water were to be ruined.
Well, I, for my part, I think that this is a moment for climate activists, I think Americans of goodwill, to take a deep sigh and say that here is at least one instance on our watch, right, mm-hmm. during our time, we didn't screw over the Native Americans one more time, right?
Mm-hmm.
At least
mm-hmm.
in this instance, right? It may be short term, but it's at least in this instance the right thing prevailed. It's something you'd be proud to tell your kids about, right?
Exactly.
And bury my heart at Standing Rock kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is this huge, all kinds of questions come up. Okay, so if you've been following the story now, this latest turn of the screw, no easement, the pipeline's dead in the water as of right now. I think the Standing Rock Sioux are maintaining the encampment because they mm-hmm. are smart enough to know that they can't all go home now and get warm. They're on the ball. But so let's go through this list of questions that I've got in front of me, DR. Number mm-hmm. one, what Donald J. Trump, mm-hmm. I'll say that name out loud, the guy who would be our man boy president, mm-hmm. our man king, our boy king president, I guess I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think he's going to do?
Well, that obviously is a very interesting question. First of all, we have to sort of determine whether or not the Electoral College affirms the projected outcome, and we obviously there's still recounts that are continuing to go, and that's obviously a separate issue.
Since you brought that up, Dia, let me just say that if you haven't, dear listener, if you haven't heard of these various accounts online that the Founding Fathers, Hamilton among them, explicitly wanted the Electoral College to be an opportunity, a last gasp opportunity to reject people like Trump. Mm-hmm. If you read the Federalist Papers, this was the thing that was going to protect us from having mm-hmm. some completely incompetent person who shouldn't get the office to get it. The Electoral mm-hmm. College is supposed to do that. So whether or not I have much hope that the Electoral College has enough muscle left in it, mm-hmm. in fact, in principle, it is supposed to stop guys like Trump, right? It is supposed to act in the national interest and not turn over to a guy who, tweets about Saturday Night Live at...
the Founding Fathers could turn out to be the biggest water protectors of all.
Absolutely.
But assuming that Trump is affirmed as president... there is an expectation that Trump will try to sort of move this along to the extent that he immediately can. The American Petroleum Institute, among other groups, they're pushing for Trump to immediately try to push for a reversal of this decision. A spokesman, Jason Miller, has told the Associated Press that he will not say whether Trump would reverse the Army's decision. Brad Plumer notes that because of the environmental impact statement, it's not something that Trump could magically overturned through executive action.
Can I just interrupt there one more second? I mean, there was something I read today saying that how we as Americans need to very carefully not normalize this guy and not somehow mm-hmm. accept that he is an emperor and that he can command the EIS out of the way, that he has to follow the law just like the rest of us.
Continue. Exactly. He's not a king. Mr. Plumer also notes, quote, one possibility is that the GOP-controlled Congress could somehow get involved and fast-track the project. We may recall the various efforts to try to take power away from President Obama regarding the final decision on whether to approve or deny the Keystone XL pipeline. It's not clear that Congress will necessarily move in this direction, but it seems pretty obvious that, you know, barring some sort of extraordinary, you know, non-legal or non sort of traditional means, it's not as though the pipeline is going to get going necessarily anytime soon. Right. And again, if these contracts that demand that the oil starts flowing by January 1, 2017, if it turns out that oil is not flowing, then it looks like Energy Transfer Partners will be in a bit of trouble, but not as much trouble as those who rely upon the water would be.
Well, okay, we'll come back to Donald, the Trumpster's conflict of interest. I mean, he owns stock in the Dakota Access Pipeline, which, okay,
yes,
fine, let's put that aside. Let's come back to the question of the January 1 finance issue. So let me just set that up. There is information floating around. We'll try and put up a link to it, but there's information saying that the Energy Transfer Partners, which is the company building the Dakota Access Pipeline, has contracts that require it to be flowing oil on January 1st, 2017, which is not too far away. All right. And so this is very reminiscent of the Cape Wind debacle of a couple of years ago, where on, you know, 12 o'clock in the morning on January 1st, 2016, NSTAR killed Cape Wind because it no longer had to honor that contract. The question is whether or not the people like Wells Fargo, like Deutsche Bank, like Bank of America, all these people that have money in the skin in the game, so to speak, are they going to walk away from this pipeline on January 1st? And which would then, despite what the Trumpster wants to do, on January 1st, if that money walks away, that $3.7 billion melts. So do you think, tell me, what's the story with the finance for the pipeline come New Year's Day?
That seems to be something of a murky situation. There was a recent interview on Democracy Now! In which it was noted that Energy Transfer Partners is trying to suggest that that January 1, 2017 deadline is not necessarily a hard and fast deadline. There seems to be a bit of a legal haze between what the rhetoric coming out of Energy Transfer Partners' mouth and the rhetoric coming out from others as to whether or not is in fact a hard and fast deadline. I think there's a recognition that it in fact is, and that Energy Transfer Partners may be bluffing. Brad Plumer notes that, quote, if the pipeline is not built, the oil will continue to be shipped out of the back end by rail, which is more expensive, unquote. It would be interesting to see what indeed would happen and what would happen to the stock, what would happen to the stock of these various companies if it turns out that everything went belly up on January the 1st. And it would sort of go to show that perhaps these entities should reconsider investments in what may turn out to be stranded assets, basically.
Because you know that it's not as if people are going to all of a sudden accept the pipeline after January 1st. There's going to be continuing arguments about it.
It goes back to what Bill McKibben talked about, was the Keystoneization of these sort of pipelines, that are entities going to think twice about investing in pipelines when they know that if there's enough protest and if there's enough citizen activism, the pipelines may never get built.
Yeah. So, Dio, there's so many questions here. Let me ask you another one, just sort of bouncing around. I was sitting outside the YMCA, my local YMCA, about to go in for a swim Sunday afternoon when I heard on the radio that the Army Corps of Engineers had denied this easement for this tiny little section at the end of the pipeline. And the only question I have is, why do you think that Obama waited until the last conceivable moment to act? Because you know that the Army Corps of Engineers is a creature of the presidency, right? It's going to do what they're told, right? Why did it have to come at 5 in the afternoon the day before the eviction notice?
I think there was a nervousness on the part of the executive branch that if law enforcement officials moved aggressively against water protectors after that December 5th deadline had hit, that there could have been something very, very bloody and very, very embarrassing to occur upon an international stage with the whole world watching, and that this was a good way to sort of avert that from happening. Now, of course, with the incoming administration, something like this could wind up still happening, and that is something to be very, very concerned about. But I think Obama in this case decided to avoid potential bloodshed, basically.
I mean, you're quite right that the Sioux, that the United Sioux have at least put in call to the United Nations, to Amnesty International, to Human Rights Watch, all these places. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, if you watch the videos, the militarized police, which is the only thing you can call them, are really mm-hmm. Not, I mean, it's not, it ain't fair, right, what's mm-hmm. going on out there. And I guess I kind of think, I mean, in a realpolitik kind of way, maybe Obama was afraid he'd get, blood on his suit the way out the door. But on mm-hmm. the other hand, I mean, I think that's kind of a little too Machiavellian for me, although I have mm-hmm. no idea why they let it drift to the last minute, other than to say they wanted to see if events would play themselves out, if somehow mm-hmm. the company would, who would, they were essentially playing chicken, see who mm-hmm. would blink first. I don't know.
There's also a more cynical interpretation, which is that if Hillary Clinton had been on November 9th adjudged to be the winner of the Electoral College, they would have immediately put a stop to it on the grounds that the people had spoken essentially against, more fossil fuel infrastructure. But because Trump was adjudged to be the winner of the Electoral College, there was a calculation that essentially the people had spoken in favor of more fossil fuel infrastructure, and therefore there's no real need to deny it up until the point where it raised the specter of being, blood on, the hands of the country. I mean, I know that is, again, that's a cynical interpretation, but again, why not stop this in its tracks long before December the 4th?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the, you raise a whole bunch of questions there about whether or not the people actually spoke, right? Mm-hmm. Which of course is a subject for books and PhD theses and hours of discussion as to, mm-hmm. The fact that Trump won the Electoral College. There was a thing in the New York Times showing how the Electoral College overweights votes from certain states, and that if mm-hmm. If you're voting in Wyoming, you have something like three times the power of a vote in New Jersey, mm-hmm. which anyway, that's a whole other discussion. I mean, the fairness of the electoral. I mean, Trump won according to the rules. That mm-hmm. doesn't mean that he won a mandate or that he won any kind of moral authority. Mm-hmm. He won in a according to the rules. And if he needs to be taught and forced to accept the fact that he's a very precarious, thin authenticity as president, because he didn't get the majority of the vote. Anyway, okay. So another mm-hmm. question, DR, where the clock's ticking. We're at almost, what am I looking at, 18 minutes or so. We can't mm-hmm. keep our listeners much longer. Tell me, what was the role of social media? I mean, mm-hmm. The only place that you could get good information about Standing Rock was essentially on Facebook.
Yes. Basically, Facebook and YouTube and other forms of social media. The one of the great tragedies that Amy Goodman discussed in her appearance on December 4th on CNN was that much of the, shall we say, corporate-owned media entities were less than interested in giving this comprehensive coverage. We've mentioned before that with the exception of Lawrence O'Donnell and Joy Reid on MSNBC, it was essentially ignored on cable. It was essentially ignored on the nightly news. And again, it goes to show the issue that we've brought up before of fear on the part of journalists, fear not only of offending advertisers, including advertisers who were reportedly involved in the financing of the Dakota Access Pipeline, but also fear of those who would attack reporters for covering a story that some viewers have been indoctrinated to believe is just so much political correctness. And as Amy Goodman suggests, we need, reporters to cover these sorts of stories without fear or favor, to report comprehensively on these issues and to do the job they're supposed to do, basically.
And I mean, what you're saying is correct, but mm-hmm. I guess what I would say is that despite the blackout on CNN, right, essentially mm-hmm. a blackout of news on the major case, the social media carried the story.
Yes.
Right? And somebody was listening because Obama mm-hmm. knew Obama took action, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody was monitoring sort of the fury, at least what I saw. Now, maybe I'm in a Facebook bubble. Maybe, mm-hmm. I'm sure I am, but it seemed like there were many people concerned about the issue, right?
Yes, and we should also give a lot of credit to not only just Amy Goodman, but also a gentleman named Jordan Charlton who works for the Young Turks, who's been doing some exemplary coverage of this issue. Tom Hartman on his radio program has also done exemplary coverage. But largely, this was covered by social media, the same way that the Black Lives Matter movement is largely covered via social media, not via mainstream media. So it's going to be something, you know, obviously in the age of Trump, social media is going to be very, very important. And obviously, to the extent that there's going to be efforts to try to you know, destroy what remains of net neutrality, those efforts have to be resisted.
We're at 20 minutes, we got to stop. But let me just say this in closing, that for me, what has happened at Standing Rock is a dress rehearsal of the next 4 years. Right? Mm-hmm. People on Facebook and social media or in person stood up and said no. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a take-home lesson that we all need to pay attention to. We may not all be able to go stand and get a water cannon blasted at us. In fact, many of us shouldn't. I'm not sure where I am on that spectrum. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, you need to stand up because you cannot accept what's coming, right? And it looks to me that this is the future, right? Mm-hmm. It's the Trump administration will be much harsher than the Obama administration, but it is still susceptible to public opinion. And so we need to be there ahead of the curve so that they don't get too much power. We'll stop there, DR. I will deny you a chance to respond. I'm sure you have something brilliant to say. Maybe we'll get to it next week. Anyway, we'll put up links to most of what we talked about on the blog associated with the podcast. That's at massclimateaction.org/blog. Please leave a comment. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. We'll link to the blog, which brings you to the SoundCloud page, so you can listen to us that way. Please share us so other folks can find us. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher or TuneIn Radio or Overcast or all those crazy things. You can find us on iTunes by searching for Massachusetts Climate Action. So we'll close the way we always close, at least nowadays, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we refuse to normalize the Trump presidency as being within the democratic norms, and we must insist that the United States put a price on carbon. So, DR, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks.
Thanks to everyone for listening. We'll be back again real soon. Bye-bye.
Thanks for being with us. And until next time, be green.
Very cool.